This is Chris Slade, former University of Virginia defensive end, graduate of 1993, back on the staff at UVA. Excited to be back coaching my old stomping grounds. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Chris Graham. I get to introduce Jerry Ratcliffe to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. It's as we're recording this, around 5 o'clock on Tuesday, and I'm sure most UVA basketball fans have not only watched the game the one time that they watched it live last night, the UVA win over Duke 69-68. It's been on ACC Network. It's been on ESPNU. I've heard from a few people who've watched it multiple times since the game, the final buzzer last night at 9 o'clock. And you may be able to kind of join in with us as much as we're going to be breaking the game down. But Jerry, there is so much to get into with this one. Where do you think we should start analyzing Virginia's big win last night?
Wow, that's a good question, Chris. It was a red-letter day for sure in UVA basketball history, considering that that was only the 10th win ever in Cameron Indoor Stadium for Virginia. 12th in Durham. I don't know where they played before Cameron, but only the fourth Virginia win at Cameron since Ralph Sampson and those guys destroyed Duke in the ACC tournament back in 1983 and caused Krzyzewski to vow eternal revenge against the Cavaliers. So that was Jeff Jones won there twice, and Tony Bennett has now won there twice. So few and far between, and something to really celebrate for Wahoo Nation, that's for sure.
What you left out there is O for Pete Gillen and O for Dave Lato.
Yeah.
The lean years, yes.
And, absolutely.
And as close as this series has been lately, I saw the number from Danny Neckel on Twitter. I want to say it was 6 of the last 8 games have been decided by, I can't remember the number now. It's single digits.
I think it was 2 points or less.
Yeah, two points or less. Yeah. And Reese Beekman, when he made the three last night, was just the third visiting player in the last 20 years to make a game-winning shot in the final 2 seconds at Cameron Indoor Stadium. I mean, this was something that stands out. And not only then that this is a Virginia team that opened with a loss to Navy, lost at JMU, hadn't won back-to-back games, since the early part of the season until this past Saturday, and now looks like a team that is starting to get some momentum towards making a run at the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I remember when Virginia was struggling a few weeks ago. I think it was Mike Barber that posed the question in a post game, and I think it was after a loss, a home loss, and. He asked Tony if he thought he had the pieces available to turn the things around. And I think while most of the fan base was skeptical, Tony felt like that he did. He just felt like that if they kept working, kept grinding, and people started to understand their roles more, probably had to cut down on his rotation a little bit. And, the chemistry thing just, I guess it takes a little longer with some teams, but he was positive. He felt like that he did have the pieces. He couldn't guarantee anything, but he felt like that they kept working. And if you're in his program, you're going to keep working. And look what we have now. I mean, you and I both have wondered what this team could play like if everybody was on the same page and clicked at the same time. And the last week we've seen that.
Yes. The home wins this past week. And then, even beating Miami the way Virginia did, and we all wrote pieces, you and I and all the Virginia media wrote about, okay, this team seems like it's back now and they're playing Tony Bennett basketball. And beating Miami, I mean, this Miami team this year, 8-4 in the ACC, 16-7 overall, they had a win at Duke. That's a good Miami team, but it's one thing to beat Miami at home, even a good Miami team at home. And then you have to go less than 48 hours away on the road to Duke against the Duke team that was coming off, a 20-point win that could have easily been a million-point win over North Carolina in Chapel Hill on Saturday. That was Duke at the height of its powers last, going into last night. And Virginia controlled the game. That's what surprised me the most, Jerry. I just, got the 8-2 lead. Coach K called timeout at the 16:40 mark of the first half. Virginia took control in the first half and led until, I guess, Duke had a 7-0 run around the, they culminated around the 4-minute mark to finally get a lead and maybe take control. But Virginia never blinked. Even when Duke took that brief lead, Virginia stayed in the game. They played like some of those Tony Bennett teams that had guys like Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and Malcolm Brogdon and Joe Harris. That group played like those older teams last night.
They really did. And that, when they were behind 17-15 with almost 11 minutes to play in the first half, and Virginia went on a 23-7 run, which how often do you see that at Cameron Indoor Stadium? And a lot of it was Gardner scored 8 straight points, and then Poppy contributed a basket. Shedrick had a couple down the stretch, and Franklin had a 3. And all of a sudden they go from 15-17 down to 32-20 up, and they lived off that lead and continued to maintain a distance over the Blue Devils. And you're right. That's the kind of stuff that some of Tony's better teams have done over time. And you didn't expect this team to do that. It wasn't exactly a avalanche, but it certainly was a nice run. And I don't know that Duke, I think they were just stunned by it all. I don't think they expected that Virginia could do that to them.
Yeah, there was talk certainly on the Duke basketball message boards and Duke fans. Oh well, it was the Carolina hangover effect. Coach K didn't seem to be having any of that last night. He credited Virginia for what it was able to do, punching them in the mouth. I think he said they carved us up. Was the exact language he used. Virginia 52-28 points in the paint advantage.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and against a Duke team with guys who, they got size. What was it? The first 22 points were in the paint, forcing Coach K to go to a zone defense to try to keep Virginia out of the lane. Even to the degree where, there was some jawing going on back and forth. Even Coach Willie got into it. We're going to get him on a podcast where he's going to talk about how he wants to fight somebody down in Cameron. But, I wrote a column, Jerry. It felt like to me that the title of my column was Virginia bullied Duke last night on their home floor. It felt like Virginia was the aggressor. And even to the last, sequence of plays when P.A. Clark goes in, 6'9 Theo John, 6'9, 240-pound Theo John gets the rebound. All he's got to do is keep that rebound. Virginia's got to foul, put him on the foul line. The game may be over. K.A. Clark goes and ties him up. The 5'9", 170-pound K.A. Clark ties him up and gets Virginia the possession back. Virginia out-physicaled Duke last night.
Yeah, and how many times have we seen that over the years? Not very often. It's usually the other way around.
Right.
And as great as a tie-up as that was, the one before that, just think if they hadn't gotten that tie-up before.
And that was K.A. as well.
Yeah. He was busting his hump all night. And so much that Dick Vitale was watching the game from home. And even though Dick can't talk right now, he's tweeting his rear end off. And he saluted Kia big time and just talked about what heart and soul that he played with. But, thinking about this, Chris, I was thinking about this late last night before I went to bed. But, this season started out, we all thought this was going to be an outside-in basketball team. And it's turned out that it's exact opposite. And who would have thunk it? Shedrick has come on like gangbusters in the last week and a half. Cafaro has as well. He's not a huge scorer, but, he had 8 points and 6 rebounds last night. He's physical. He plays defense. He boxes out, he screens, and he gets you enough baskets to just to aggravate the other team, I think, and they have to take him seriously. And then Gardner, even though he's not as big as those two guys, he's very physical and has that long reach and is very mobile. So, you know, I wonder that since that licking that Ralph and those guys put on them back in 83, if Virginia has ever scored 52 points in the paint on Duke.
Yeah. Yeah. And
limited them to 28.
Shedrick, 8 of 8 from the floor, 16.6 rebounds. I think Cafaro was 3 of 6, 2 of 2 from the line, 6 rebounds. They played a combined 40 minutes. So when your centers can give you a combined 24 points and 12 rebounds and shoot 11 for 14 from the floor, you should win some games. Gardner, 17 points. That matchup, Jerry, when I analyze the game before, I always write a pregame column where I try to analyze the individual matchups in the game. And he happened to match up with Paolo Banchero, who started the season as the prohibitive favorite to be the number one pick. Maybe he slid down a little bit now, 5 or 6 or so, but he's still, you know, a lottery pick, a top of the lottery pick projected in the upcoming NBA draft as a freshman. I thought, man, Banchero, not only is he that talented, but he's also 6'10", and Gardner 6'6", and Gardner struggles with bigger guys in the post. You know, this could be the matchup that really, you know, turns the game. And in my thought going in, just analyzing it, was against Virginia. This could be the matchup that Duke exploits. Gardner, 17 points, 8 rebounds. Banchero, 9 points, 9 rebounds. Did not score in the second half. Only had one shot attempt. The wild 3 at the buzzer hit the top of the backboard in the second half. He had 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 turnovers in 20 minutes. You almost had to remember he was on the floor. Gardner took him out of the game that much.
Yeah, and I know some of the national TV guys were wondering why Duke wasn't giving him the ball more, why they weren't trying to exploit Virginia more with his talents, because he's a matchup nightmare. But yeah, Virginia controlled him. They doubled the post a lot when he was down low, put handcuffs on him. And I think he had a 3 late in the first half. So he went almost 30 minutes without scoring a basket if he hadn't made that late 3 in the first half. That's unbelievable.
I pointed out in a column, I wrote a lengthy piece about Gardner's work on Banchero, that in the second half, you know, he had the 20 minutes, no points, 1 shot miss, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, the 3 turnovers, that Virginia walk-on Malachi Poindexter in the second half had 1 less shot attempt, the same amount of rebounds, and 2 less turnovers than Banchero did. And I say that, and it's sort of laughing, but I wanted to talk about Poindexter. As much as he didn't shoot the ball in the game, he had a couple of rebounds. When Reese Beekman got into foul trouble and Cody Statman was not effective last night, and Tony decided to go, hey, I'm going to stick Poindexter in the game and see what happens. Poindexter had been getting some rotation minutes early in the season, but it had been a while. He got a couple of garbage minutes at the end of the Miami win Saturday. But he hadn't played a meaningful minute in quite a while. He played 14 minutes last night, and his plus minus was just -4, which tells you, okay, he didn't shoot the ball, he didn't do much else, but he stayed with his guy and kept Virginia in the game when he needed to be in the game. Because Beekman played 25 minutes because of the foul trouble. So effectively, he played a lot of Beekman's minutes. And you know, this guy was 2 years ago playing at St. Anne's Belfield, scoring 13 points a game, had to get into UVA as a student to be able to walk on. And he played 14 minutes in the biggest game he'll ever play in and availed himself well. That just said, you know, it says a lot about Tony Bennett and his staff and what they do to keep guys prepared and also to give guys confidence. That guy played with confidence last night.
Yeah, we've heard that from not just some of the walk-ons in the past. And by the way, Malachi is just a terrific kid. I remember interviewing him and doing a story when it was announced he was going to walk on. But yeah, that's one thing we've heard throughout the years from guys who may not get a lot of playing time, particularly this time of the year when the rotation shrinks. Tony, you know, reminds them every day in practice, you know, you got to be ready, because we might need you. And how many times have we seen him go to a guy on the bench that in that situation where they haven't been getting a lot of playing time, but they come in and they play meaningful minutes and they deliver. They may not you know, put up a ton of points or whatever, but they get the job done, and they usually turn in a pretty good defensive performance. So, again, that just goes back to a testing to how good a coach that Tony Bennett is, and how he keeps his whole team involved throughout the season. And it's, I think a lot, that doesn't happen in a lot of places, I don't believe.
Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
Last night in one of my postgame columns, I kept naming game MVPs for Virginia. I started with probably Beekman, obviously. He had 5 points in the last minute, 48. Even though he only had 7 overall, he had the steal, the pickpocket, and the basket and the foul. He didn't make the free throw, but tied the game with a minute 47 to go, I think it was. And then the three, obviously, at the end. Then I wanted to name Caden Shedrick, 16 points, 8 of 8 from the field. Even Poindexter, just because he didn't score, didn't shoot the ball, but, you know, he held his own. Then Kihei Clark came to mind. 8 points. I think he was maybe 3 of 11 from the field. You know, not a great game shooting.
4 of 11
from the field. Not a great game shooting. But the 9 assists, and even the 9 assists, I don't think tell the whole story, because – He kind of steeled the team, you know, S-T-E-E-L-E-D, the team. You see people write that phrase some or that word sometimes. But, you know, when Duke was – there were a few different times in the second half that Duke felt like they're knocking on the door. They're ready to take this game over. And I'm thinking of, you know, the one little dish he made to Gardner, and Gardner made a basket and got fouled and, you know, finished a three-point play. The alley-oop pass to Shedrick for – from half court for the dunk when it felt like he was maybe making a run there. They kind of quieted things down. He made a little, couple little teardrops in the lane that quelled Duke runs. That was among the best 8.9 assist performances I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was he played a huge role in a key stretch there. Duke had cut it to 41-38. Somewhat early in the second half. And then Kihei got the ball, went coast to coast for a layup, racing down the floor. It's about as fast as I've ever seen Kihei move for a layup. Then a few minutes later, he hit that floater you were talking about. And then on consecutive plays down the floor, he had the dish to Gardner for a layup, and then the long pass to Shedrick for the dunk. Just some amazing passing skills and driving skills. You know, we've heard Jaden Gardner say this many times this year, is that he's the heart and soul of this team. He's our guy. And, you know, I don't know how anybody could – knock Kihei. There's been a lot of Kihei detractors out there the last couple of years, but this guy gives it everything. So he might have an off night every now and then, but I tell you what, he is such a settling factor, I think, for this team this year. He may not have a great shooting game, but his presence, floor presence on both ends of the court, are immeasurable, I think, because, you know, he gets the team into its offense. He gets the ball to the right people most of the time. He's a threat to score. He's confident. He hardly ever loses his poise, it seems. And then on defense, I mean, he's the guy responsible for trying to keep the other point guard from getting their team into their offense. So he's got a lot on his table, and I just think he does it so well. He played 38 minutes, 27 seconds last night, more than anybody on either team. And there's a reason why.
And he's playing against either a 5-star point guard, Jeremy Roach, or who's roughly his size, 4 inches taller, about the same weight, or he's playing against those big, thick guys like Trevor Keels, who looks like a running back in the NFL already.
Yeah, he sure does.
He's just the biggest freshman I've ever seen playing basketball. And then, you know, the A.J. Griffin, who had 27 against North Carolina only had 2 points last night. Virginia did a great
job.
One of seven from the field. Yeah. And was benched for much of the second half because he was so ineffective. Wendell Moore had a quiet night. Virginia's guards outplayed Duke's guards. That was another key to last night. And Reese Beekman, let's talk about Reese. He gets the foul trouble. His second foul with about 2 minutes, I think it was two or three left in the first half, a pretty dumb foul. And Tony was lecturing him. You can see on the TV broadcast. It was right when Virginia had gotten that 32-20 lead. I can't think of who it was for Duke who made the basket, but it may have been Keels. Had position, it was one of those, just give up the shot and it's okay, go back down the court. But he got his second foul, then got his third foul 42 seconds into the second half. He's on the bench for a long stretch, comes back, gets his fourth foul, has to go on the bench at the under eight timeout until the under four timeout. 25 minutes on the floor last night, by far a season low for him, even going back to the November, December games, some of the walkover games we had. And yet, so he's not in a rhythm, not anything else. And then he has the two biggest plays of the game, maybe the two biggest plays of Virginia's season at this stage. And hitting a three, this guy, Jerry, I ran the numbers on this. His first 34 jump shots this year, 2 and 3 point jump shots. He was 5 of 34 on jump shots to start the season. He's 13 of his last 26 from three now with that make last night. It's one thing to see a guy improve in the offseason to get better, shoot jumpers in April and May and June and get better. He's gotten better during the season. And that says a lot about this young man's work ethic, I think.
Yeah, it does. And, I think we've talked about this before. He told us down in Charlotte at the ACC tip-off that both he and Kia had spent so much time working on their jump shots in the offseason. And for him, it just didn't kick in the way he expected it to. But he's a guy that never loses confidence in himself. And he knows he can contribute in other ways and just keep working on his shot. And, he only had one other basket in the second half until that three-pointer at the end. And that's when he stole the ball and scored and tied it at 66 with less than 2 minutes to play. And then of all the people to have the ball in his hands at the end of the game, just like at Syracuse, against Syracuse in the ACC tournament last year when he was wide open on the right wing, and this time it was the left wing, and buried it. Looks like just like he had complete confidence. It was going in. I think he was even a little stunned by it, even though I think he felt good about the shot.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4600.
I like the story of how that play got drawn up. Our favorite fighting assistant coach, Jason Williford. We learned something last night. Talk about that story about Williford and the out of bounds play.
Yeah, Tony said he learned a long time ago that if you can give certain responsibilities to assistant coaches, it's a good thing. One, it takes a little bit less off his table. And it gives those assistant coaches a sense of contribution and importance into the whole scheme of things. And so he gave the inbounds play design to Jason Williford, which is, I think we all remember back to Tony's first or second year when they had all those inbounds problems, particularly against Miami in the ACC tournament. And so he decided to give Williford that assignment of drawing up inbounds plays. And so he drew up one play. If all of those who said they watched the game over again, and my son and I watched it from a different angle. It was from the above the rim angle with no play-by-play or anything. It gave you a complete different perspective of the game. I think a better perspective, so you could tell how physical the game was as opposed to the regular angle. And he drew up the play. They lined up. Kihei was going to throw it in. He couldn't find anybody open. He called timeout. They went back over in the huddle, and he redrew the play and had Beekman inbounds because he's a little bigger guy. Drew up the play, ended up in Kihei's hands, and Kihei was with that in great sensibility, sixth sense he has of finding the open guy at the last second, going back to you know when, spotted Beekman just wide open there on the left wing and got it to him quickly, and he buried it and was actually fouled on the play. Although you're not going to get that call at Cameron Indoor Stadium
with a second to go on the clock.
Good job for Coach Jay Willie, just a piece of advice to anybody at Cameron Indoor Stadium: if you're going to pick on somebody or want to try to start a fight, don't pick on Jay Willie. You make it a big mistake.
Don't find the 6'8", 250-pound guy. No, he's not a former point guard as an assistant coach. He's a former power forward who's an assistant coach.
Absolutely.
You know, on that play, too, I think this is something that that Williford can sort of have as a feather in his cap. With the timeout, okay, so Virginia had to call a timeout because, you know, the first play wasn't working. Kihei was being smothered by the big man. You know, Coach K kept the big man on. He kept Williams on, the 7-1 guy on. And what that is kind of like, it reminds me of, you know, I'm thinking of the kick six play in the Auburn-Alabama game from a few years ago when you almost outsmart yourself sometimes when you do things. You know, when you miss a long kick and they return it, you've got a bunch of linemen on the field trying to catch a guy who's a returner. In this situation, you've got a 7-1 guy who's responsible. And Williams even said after the game, Mark Williams even said after the game, hey, I should have stayed with Beekman, but you're 7-1. And so he retreated back. I've watched a play so many times, and I'm sure you and your son John did too, that he kind of wanders around, ends up back and heading back to the post to guard Shedrick. And so having the 7-1 guy impede the inbound pass, great. But as soon as the ball's in play, you got a 7-1 guy guarding a guard. And Virginia exploited that. And actually, too, Duke was switching on all screens, and they had Banchero on Clark. So you had your 6'10 guy and 7-1 guy on two Virginia guards. No wonder the play worked for Virginia. Now, that was Virginia outsmarting. Hey, give them credit. They outsmarted Coach K there.
Absolutely. And, Williams took complete blame for that play. He said, you know, I should have stuck with him. I lost him. And he said, it's on me. He said, I let my teammates down. But, that was just a great recognition by Kihei that Williams had left Beekman, and Beekman was – he couldn't have been any more wide open when he got the ball. And the other guy recovered in time just to kind of challenge it. But it was gone by then. And great shot and great play. Jay Willie should get an extra beer or something for that.
Extra beer for that, and a couple extra beers for the bare knuckles that he was getting ready to get into there too. We have to let it. We won't let him live that down when we get him on the podcast again soon. So Duke had a Carolina hangover, but that was 48 hours. Virginia doesn't play again until Saturday. There's bound to be something of a Duke hangover today, and maybe even, you know, I'm sure Tony's going to practice them out of that at the next couple of days. But Virginia's got Georgia Tech. Now, on paper, it's a game that Virginia should be favored in, certainly will be favored in. And, you know, Georgia Tech's struggling this year. But Georgia Tech's got a win at home over Florida State. They're still an ACC team. And Virginia now with this big win has, you know, certainly enhanced their NCAA tournament resume, but cannot afford a loss this weekend. So cannot afford a Duke hangover.
Yeah, they jumped from 88 to number 80 in the net rankings overnight with that win. And plus that gives them a quad one win.
Another one,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the second one now, yeah.
And
that's so, two more than Virginia Tech has, by the way, who somehow ranked like 42nd or 43rd.
Yeah, I still don't get that.
I don't get that. Virginia has a better strength of schedule, a better quad one record, a better quad two record, and Virginia Tech is 40 spots or more ahead of us in the NET. So
now, I want somebody in the net rankings to explain that to Virginia fans, because none of us understand the logic in that. But yeah, you're right. I think Tony will, if he recognizes any continued hangover past today or tomorrow, he might give them a couple of days to celebrate. That was a hell of a win over the number 17 in the country on the road. If he senses any drop off after tomorrow, he knows how to get them out of it. He says, "I just run them." That'll get your mind off of things in a hurry. You're getting
puking in the trash cans if you have to, right?
Yeah,
that'll get it out of your system.
absolutely. I think he learned that the old-fashioned way himself, probably back when he played for his dad.
My guess is Dick Bennett may have done that once or twice.
You think so?
Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all those places.
Green Bay.
That's right. Green Bay. Yeah. Where was he? At Stevens Point in Division III when he was making extra money selling tapes about how you're supposed to run the pack line.
Exactly. But yeah, that, you know, Georgia Tech, they have talent. They haven't been quite as good as I think Josh Pastner hoped that they would be this year, but you know, they're a sneaky team. You let them hang around in a game, they can bite you. So
yep,
that's something they'll I'm sure Tony will have it. These guys mentally ready for that challenge come Saturday.
Yeah, they beat Florida State by double digits. They played Duke well. So yeah, they're a team that you have to watch for. I've done the math on this, Jerry. Maybe we're getting ready to wrap up the podcast here. I've done the math on this. I'm sure you've done the same thing. And when I did this a couple weeks ago, I said, if Virginia can somehow get to 19 regular season wins, and this is when they needed to go 8-3 to do so, if they can somehow go 19-11, maybe go to Brooklyn, win a game, get to 20-12, it might still be we might, you know, still be on our pins and needles on Sunday, Selection Sunday, but that's probably enough to get you in. This win last night, Virginia's 15-9 now, 4-2 down the stretch. It's not easy. Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech on the road, Miami on the road, Duke at home, Florida State at home, and then Louisville on the road. That's not an easy stretch to say the least, but go 4-2 down the stretch. And I think it's doable. But you do that, I think this team with last night's win maybe plays their way into the NCAA tournament, which a couple weeks ago seemed like a really tall mountain to try to climb.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have given them much of a chance a few weeks ago. But, you know, those games are winnable. Miami certainly is going to be trying to seek revenge. But, you know, they lost to Notre Dame at home in their last home game. So they're beatable. Usually the crowd there is pretty good, but not overwhelming in terms of the environment you play in. Duke up here, I'm sure Krzyzewski doesn't want to go out 0-2 this year to Tony in Virginia, considering it's his last go-round. Florida State here, I think, is gettable. Now that Virginia's bigs are starting to play very physical basketball, because that's usually the Seminole strength. Louisville on the road, I don't know. I mean, you don't know what state that program is going to be in by the time Virginia gets there in the last regular season game. They might be hungry. They might have given up by then. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So certainly they're not going to make the NCAA tournament. The Hokies on the road is always a challenge. It's going to be a raucous environment. It would make their season to beat Virginia down there. So, yeah, but still, they're beatable. Virginia showed that up here. And we missing anybody else? I think that's it.
But I think that covers them all. And, you know, and that
Virginia, they are winnable games, yeah.
That Virginia team that beat Virginia Tech a few weeks ago, it wasn't the team that is playing now. That was still the Virginia right. team that would split a win and a loss every other game and was still trying to find its way. For now, Virginia's found its way. So yeah, should be an interesting next few weeks. That win last night, let our listeners bask in the glow a little bit more. I'm sure there's more replays on the ACC Network and ESPNU, and you can always go on the ESPN app and watch it again for the 100th time. I got more texts and emails from friends and long-lost friends I hadn't talked to in a while last night and this morning and the rest of the day than I'd gotten in a long time. It felt like Christmas and my birthday and wedding day all rolled into one from the UVA alum perspective. But, yeah, I got to get back to work here in a couple of days as far as that goes for Tony and the crew. So, Jerry, any last thoughts as we wrap up?
Not a lot. I think Virginia fans deserve a chance to be on cloud nine for the rest of the week. Like I said, that doesn't happen very often, four times since 1983. And those, all of these teams, of all the teams that you might expect to have pulled that off, this one probably would not have been one of them. Those two back in the mid 90s was loaded with some talent. Jay Willie was one of them. Corey Alexander, Junior Burrow.
Errol Dean, Jamal Robinson. Dean,
yeah.
Those are some good teams.
Good teams. And then, of course, the Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter bunch back in, was it 18, I guess, that they pulled that off?
Yeah. That Ty look-off shot, that was
– yeah.
That'll go down – that's in lore. And then now Reese Beekman is right there with him.
Yeah, I noticed last night that I don't know which one of the players it was they were talking to said that we don't have a nickname for Reese, so I guess all you people listening out there, you nominate nicknames for Mr. Beekman going forward. I mean, giant killer or something, I don't know. But he's his 3 points at the end of the games are becoming deadly, and that's what he's getting known for. So I imagine people are going to be a little leery of that on other teams going forward. Whatever you do, don't leave Reese Beekman open at the end of the game.
Here's my contribution: Big Shot Beeks.
Big Shot Beeks. I like that.
He's got two pelts now in ACC play.
Awesome Hall of Fame coaches. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. That's right. Hey, I said the last thing, but then let me ask you: What do you got? What are you working on this week? On JerryRatcliffe.com that folks might be interested in.
Yeah, we'll do some more hoops. I got a column planned on Virginia's resurgence in recruiting down in the 757. We use some of our Chris Slade interview for some of that too. Also want to take a little closer look at the football schedule. I never got around to that when it first came out because there was so much going on. And my friend Jonathan Coleman, who wrote the Jerry West book, which I've read about five times. If you like the Lakers, it's not just about Jerry West. There's all kinds of great stories about the Lakers and basketball in that book. He lives in New York, and he I don't know how we got to talking about it the other day, but he mentioned Al McGuire, and I told him about how I had had beers with McGuire when he was in Charlottesville once. So Al McGuire used to, when he would come to college towns, he would never get taxis and stuff. He would hitchhike wherever he was staying to the arena or wherever he needed to go. And I was in Terry Holland's office that day, and McGuire was in there, and he said, "Hey, would you mind giving Al a ride back to the Boar's Head?" And I said, "No, I'd be happy to." And so drove him over there in my old Oldsmobile, and we sat down for about 3 or 4 hours and talked basketball and other stuff, and sipped a couple of cold ones. And he said, "You ought to write about that." And I said, "Well, I did once upon a time," but he said, "Well, you ought to write about it again." So I might revive that column and put it up on the thing. I think anybody that remembers Al McGuire would probably get a kick out of it.
I think that is a requirement at this stage. Just hearing the little synopsis there, the quick pitch, the elevator pitch. I want to buy that story. So go ahead. Yeah, definitely work on that. That's anything with Al McGuire is going to be gold as far as that goes.
Yeah. I don't know if the current generation even knows who he is, but everybody else knows how important he was to basketball and what a colorful character he was.
Back when we got one game a week.
Yeah, I'll never forget. It was in the 70s. I can't remember what game it was, but he was famous when he pulled off an upset. He would be out there on the court dancing. Not a bad dancer for a guy his age, but he would entertain. You know, the people just expected it, and the TV people would go wild because it's okay. Is Al going to dance at the end of this? And he'd be out there dancing by himself on the basketball. Wow. What a character!
Yeah, what a character. We don't have him like that anymore, certainly. We'll look forward to that on JerryRatcliffe.com. I've got some stuff coming up on AugustaFreePress.com as well, basking in the glow of Virginia Duke. But then we have to get to reality pretty soon. Hey, yep. Thanks, Jerry, as always, for your time. And to our listeners out there, thank you for your time. If you have any questions for us to address on a future podcast, drop Jerry a line on Twitter, drop me a line on Twitter, send us an email. Our email addresses are on both of our websites. We'd love to hear from you and love to talk about what you want us to talk about. For Jerry Ratcliffe, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Everyone have a great day.